in the process of being real, of not minimizing the pain, we also want to reveal the untold story of the positivity. Welcome to this special Purim edition of the Attached Life podcast. As you know, the Attached Life is an exploration of how we can build deeper, more meaningful relationships with those we love most by looking at the developmental stories of our lives. This unique episode looks at some of the insights and perspectives that we can learn from the Purim story about how to look at our lives and how we developed. This episode is sponsored by Yona Tees. Yona Tees makes high-quality Jewish apparel, accessories, and content that makes you smile and helps you remember the beauty of this world. Yona Tees thinks of their designs less as products and more as reminders, small reminders of what we love and value most in the least expected places. Shop Jewish swag at Yona Tees, YonaTees.com, YonaTees.com. I actually had the opportunity a number of years ago with my good friend Neil Bodner to develop and design a poster for Yona Tees. Check that out on their website as well. It's a poster of the Serenity Prayer from the 12 Steps translated into some more of a Jewish version and language of that concept and of that prayer. Yona Tees also does custom design and print. You can reach out to them at yonatees@gmail.com or yonatees.com/custom. Personally, I have a number of products from Yona Tees. Their stuff is creative, insightful, and really does make you smile and really does remind you of some very important things that we often forget about in our lives. Relationships are too important and too challenging to take for granted. Welcome to the Attached Life, where we explore the magic and the madness of our most meaningful relationships. The story of Megillas Esther is the story of a person named Esther. But Esther also means hidden, and Megillah also means to reveal. So the story of Megillas Esther is the story of revealing something hidden. It's revealing the story of this hidden part of all of our lives. The Mishnah teaches Hakoreas Megillah Lemafreya Lo Yatza. A person who reads the Megillah out of order is not fulfilling their mitzvah of the Megillah. But the Baal Shem Tov teaches that there's another layer of meaning to this Mishnah. That somebody who reads the Megillah Lemafreya, meaning retroactively, or meaning that it's something that happened in the past, Lo Yatza, they don't fulfill the purpose of the Megillah. Because the purpose of the Megillah, of reading the Megillah, is to see the story of the Megillah of Esther as the story of our own lives, to see ourselves in the Megillah, and to see the Megillah in ourselves. The story of the Megillah is a story of trauma. Esther, the person Esther, and Esther, the hidden part of so many lives, is a story of immense difficulty. And I think that it lends a very, very important perspective on so much of what we talk about on this podcast. Because we talk here a lot about the story of our lives. We talk about the story of our upbringing, the story of our earlier years, of our formative development, of how we became the person that we find ourselves to be, the person that we experience ourselves at this moment, how that evolved. And that's the story, that's the hidden story of our lives. And we often focus in this context on the challenges in those developmental years, the ways that there may have been aspects that were undernourished or aspects that were not met with exactly or close enough to what we really would have needed and how it affected us. And one of the pitfalls of that kind of focus and the kind of ideas that we talk about here, one of the pitfalls that can emerge from that is a very negative way of looking at our lives, of looking at our past, at looking at caregivers, at looking at people who really tried very hard to do what was best for us and really may have been struggling with their own things and were really, really trying and may have fallen short and may have affected us in ways that we wish may have been different. But we can sit here and sometimes fall into a bit of a victim kind of mentality, and we can cast more negativity than we even want to. And in doing that, what can often happen is we actually lose a lot of the good that really existed as well. And I think the story of the Megillah shows us that we can tell a real story about something that was hidden. We can tell a real story of trauma, and we can be nuanced about it. We can have subtlety to it. We can see the complexity. We can see that it's multifaceted and that there are many aspects and layers of what was going on. And we don't need to hide that story. Megillas Esther is the revealing of that which is hidden. But in looking at the story of trauma, there are three different aspects that I think are so important for healing trauma. Even if a person didn't have, when I use the word trauma, I don't mean that it has to be someone who had very significant or overwhelming trauma. It could be, but it could also just be the challenges that a person experienced in life. So there's three aspects that we see in the Megillah of how to do this type of storytelling of our own lives in a way that allows for a more wholesome view and not just a hyper-focus on the negativity. So point number one that comes before the 3 points is that we're telling a real story. Megillas Esther, we are telling the hidden parts of the story. We are being real with ourselves or whoever is close enough to us that we're being real with. It's not about minimizing the pain. It's not about sweeping things under the rug. There is an authenticity to it. It's about revealing the hidden. And in doing that, there are three things that we see in the Megillah that are so important and can sometimes get lost or missed when people start to engage these types of Megillas Esther storytellings, these type of hidden revelations of the experiences of our lives. The first is that one of the aspects of trauma that is so devastating is that trauma is the experience of something that felt very negative. But not only does the experience of trauma in which something felt very negative create a negative event, but it can actually cast shadows that reach beyond the negative event itself. So it's not just that something bad happened to me or something painful happened to me, but it's that then I also don't see the good and the positive things that were surrounding it or that were next to it or that were before it or after it. And so what can happen is somebody may have had, let's say, a parent who was very difficult, had issues with anger and whatever it may have been, was overbearing or something of that sort. And now the person doesn't even really have the ability to remember the aspects of when that parent was actually in his best self and when that parent actually did show up in a way that was loving and nurturing and connecting. And one of the things that we want to try and do, again, in the process of being real, of not minimizing the pain, of being Megala the Esther, revealing the hidden, the untold stories, is we also want to reveal the untold story of the positivity, of the fact that this parent may have been very, very challenging and caused a lot of pain, and we need to work through that, and we need to talk about that, and we need to be real about that. And what's it like to remember the moment when you told me about that when your father would play an instrument that he played, you saw in him a younger, more joyful aspect of who he was, and that in those moments there was a different energy in the air. And can you allow yourself, can you have permission within yourself to be able to appreciate that? And that doesn't minimize the pain when there was pain, but just in the same way that the pain doesn't have to minimize that there was joy when there was joy. And can we have permission for that? And in the story of Esther, we find exactly this. It's a story where she had a lot of challenges, but we also hear about the positivity. We hear about the little tiny gifts that Hashem sent her along the way to accompany her through the pain. We hear about the people who she found favor in their eyes and were able to do favors for her, even though she was in a terribly difficult situation. We hear about the small little things behind the scenes that were going on that may have been missed that were actually working for her in her favor, even as she's going through her challenging situation. And so for all of us, as we look at the challenging moments, can we also try to find and peel back the layers to see where was there something good? Where was there something that I can connect to? And that doesn't have to create a binary. It's not one or the other. They can both exist. They can exist in a alternating, pendulating kind of a way that we can see both of them. They're both on the canvas. The canvas is big enough. The size of the canvas is big enough to hold both of them. And we don't need to make it that it's either I can see the positivity and then I'm minimizing the negativity, or that I see the negativity and then I'm minimizing the positivity. I can have both. Both are able to be present. That's the first aspect that I think we see in Megillas Esther. The second important part we see in the story of Esther that relates to all of us as we look at the stories of our lives is that the container, the capacity that we each have for handling whatever comes our way, for being able to adapt to whatever comes our way, is far larger than we might think it is. There's a common definition people give to trauma that I actually take issue with. The definition people often give is that it's an experience of something that a person does not have the capacity to respond to, or that is beyond a person's capacity, something bigger than what they can handle. The reason I don't like that definition is because it's not true. When a person has a trauma response, so they get very activated to fight against it or to flee from it, or they go into freeze and they go into shutdown, or they develop some sort of internal shame, or they develop an addiction, or they develop whatever it may be that seems like a traumatic response, is a traumatic response, is a response to trauma. It's not that this thing was too big for their capacity to respond to. This is their capacity to respond to it. Fighting against it or fleeing from it or freezing, that is a response. That is an appropriate, good response to the situation. It's a response that makes sense considering the stimulus that's in front of them. They are adapting. That is an adaptive response. If someone would barge into the room I'm in right now, that I'm sitting in, speaking in, and comfortably, and all of a sudden startle me, and so I would jump up when they walked in, or I would freeze because I would be so taken and I didn't know what was going on and startled and I just froze, I don't think anyone would look at that and think, you know, what's wrong with him? Why did he just jump up, or why did he just freeze? Of course, because that is an appropriate, congruent response with what's actually happening. That is my capacity to respond. The shutting down, the freezing, is a brilliant mechanism that God created in our system for how to deal with something that's overwhelming. That is the capacity to respond. It's not too much for our capacity to respond. Even the development of an addiction, as we've spoken about elsewhere, or internal shame, or an internal critic, or any of these things, an anxious attachment style, an avoidant attachment style, these things are all adaptive responses. The definition that I like to use for looking at what trauma is that we have an adaptive response to a situation that then sticks around for longer than we want it to. So I have the fight response because someone's attacking me. That's not a problem. That's good. That's my adaptive response. But then what about a year later, or whenever it is, that I respond in a fighting way, even when people are not actually attacking me, but I perceive everyone to be attacking me, so I'm always fighting, or that I shut down even when there isn't a reason to be shutting down in front of me right now. That's the trauma. The trauma, or what we call post-traumatic stress, is that I have a post-traumatic, the trauma itself, traumatic stress is not a problem. It's actually a good thing. Post-traumatic stress is the problem. It's that the stimulus is no longer here, but I'm still responding in that same way. But the point being, in this context, that what we see in Megillas Esther is that the container, the capacity we have, is far larger than what we might imagine. Esther Hamalka, actually even in that name, Hamalka, she wasn't initially a Malka, she wasn't initially a queen, she did not believe she had the capacity to be the one to be in that situation. She didn't think she had the capacity to go in the first place. She didn't think she had the capacity to be the one chosen. And when chosen, she didn't think she had the capacity to be the one that would go in front of the king and address the situation and put herself there in that space, in that spot. She didn't know that she could carry that. But it turns out that she absolutely could, and she did. And she became Esther Hamalka. And part of the story that we see of Esther, which is the hidden part of all of ourselves over the Megillah, the revelation of that hidden part, is seeing how incredibly large that capacity is, how incredibly large that container is to handle all the trauma, to respond and adapt to it, and to be able to be present to it and to work through it. And as we look at the stories of our lives, to know that we have that container, we have that capacity, larger than we may ever have imagined. The third and last point that I want to highlight from Megillas Esther as being a very important part of how we process and look at our own story is that we want to try at least the goal, not so easy to get to, certainly not simple and certainly not quick, but to even just be aware of the goal, to be able to have a vision towards this goal of shifting post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth. The true healing of our past is not when we get rid of it or we cut ourselves off of it or it becomes numb or neutral. It's not even when we let go of the stress of it. It's actually when we transform and elevate that stress into growth. When we're able to look back on those past experiences that were once difficult, challenging, and painful, and they still may feel painful, but we're able to see them as a source of growth, as a source of strength, as a source of a catalyst, as being a catalyst for who we've become and how we became the person that we are, that I'm able to live in a certain way with a certain depth to who I am, that this really relates to the second point, that my container, my capacity expanded or deepened or became more nuanced or more sophisticated or profound. I've developed a bigger way, a broader spaciousness or consciousness, a deeper way of living in this world because of the experiences that I had. As the pasuk says, "Evan masu habonim haisa l'rosh pina," that the stone that at first was despised by the builders, that was looked at as a ugly shard or unimportant or something to discard or get rid of, became the crowning jewel, became the cornerstone, became that which became prized. That I have become I have an ability to be a certain type of parent or a certain type of spouse or a certain type of person in my community or in this world, or just to relate to myself in a certain way. Or I have the capacity to have a certain relationship with God, with a more expansive experience in this world, a deeper, more meaningful, more fulfilling experience in this world, because I experienced the challenges, because I was forced to have the container expand, to become more sensitive, more refined, deeper, more nuanced, etc. When I'm able to look at the past, not just as something that I want to neutralize, but something that actually becomes Zdonos, Nas, and Zechuyos, that the sins, the challenges, the tragedies have become actually refined into merits, that they actually become something important to me, that I can look back on those things and see them positively as contributing to who I am now, which doesn't have to be, it's not a binary. It's not that now there's no pain or no darkness in them, but it's that the pain and the darkness itself, which still exists, becomes part and parcel of becoming a bigger version of who I am now. And that's very much part of the Megillas Esther story, as we see the transformation of Esther Hamalka as she becomes a different person because of her challenges. That the Esther, the hidden part of ourselves, becomes something elevated, something bigger than we could have imagined because of that. As the story goes in the Gemara, that on Purim, at the Purim Suda, Kam Rabba v'shachte l'Reb Zeira, that the Gemara tells a really wild story of Rabba actually killing Reb Zeira in the middle of their Purim meal. And this is explained by some commentaries in a kind of more allegorical way, that Rabba, the name Rabba, also means great or big, and Reb Zeira means Zeira, is small. So Rabbah got up and killed Zerah. The bigness came and got rid of the smallness, that there's a kind of a shedding of skin, of becoming, of evolving into the next layer of self, what's often called an Ibor Sheni, a second birth, a rebirth, which needs to be precipitated by some sort of death. It needs to be a dissolving of one layer that leads into the next layer, but it's not gotten rid of. It actually kind of transforms or elevates into that next layer. And that's the story of Megillas Esther, of Esther starting off in this more meek kind of person and going through her challenges, and because of those challenges, with those challenges, becoming Esther Hamalka, becoming queened in that way. And of course, the last point to all of this, which I'm not even counting as one of the three because it's really the ground upon which all of this stands on, is that Hashem's name is not in the Megillah and not in the Purim story, but it is the Purim story. It's not in the Purim story because that would make it seem too pinpointed or too detailed, when the reality is that the whole story is the name of Hashem. To mention Hashem's name in this pasuk or in that pasuk, in this part of the Megillah or that part of the Megillah, would make it seem limited, when really the whole point is that the entire story is the story of Hashem. Is that Hashem is with us in this entire story, that this whole story is within Hashem, that there's a broader purpose, a broader reality that we can't see, that is being revealed in this. The revelation here is not a revelation that we can see the full story. We know that Esther min HaTorah Minayin is Haster Aster. What does it mean that this is a story of hiddenness? So the pasuk says that Hashem says, I'm going to hide my hiddenness from you. What does that mean, that I'm going to hide my hiddenness? So it's explained, it means that there's a certain level of hiddenness. You're playing hide and seek with someone, so you know they're hiding and you're trying to find them. Hiding my hiddenness means we don't even know that there's something hidden. We don't even know to look for it. We don't even know that we can't see it. And if you think about it, Megillas Esther is the revelation of hiddenness. But it's not the revelation of the hiddenness of hiddenness. It's only a revelation of hiddenness, meaning the two layers of hiddenness is that even the hiding is hidden. The revelation of hiddenness is that now we know there's something hiding. We don't see yet what it is that's hiding, because we still can't see the full tapestry. We still can't see the full size of the canvas. We still can't see the full size of the container and the capacity that really exists. We can't see the full growth, post-traumatic growth that comes from the post-traumatic stress. We can't see the full story of everything that's evolving. But what we can see is the revelation of one layer of hiddenness. We can see that there's a hiddenness. We can see that there's something more. What is it that's more? We don't have a full view of yet. But we can see that there's something more. It's the Megillas Esther. So now instead of a Haster Aster, there's only one Hester. Instead of a hiding of the hiding, there's just hiding. But to at least know that we're searching, know that there's something there, know that there is more, that itself is the ultimate source of Geula, the ultimate source of revelation and a cathartic, transformative experience. And when we think about looking at the development of ourselves and our lives and trying to understand that and refine who we are and develop into who we want to be, and we look back at our pasts and we see traumas and challenges and difficulties and pain, and we oftentimes will then focus on those elements, I think that the Megillas Esther story, the story of our lives, brings to the surface these different points that are so important to bring into the picture as well. So again, number one, seeing the good pieces along the way, even in the pain. Number two, recognizing the broader capacity and container that we may not have known was there. Number three, the post-traumatic growth that comes through post-traumatic stress. And finally, the thing that holds all of it is that it's the story that is held within God, which is the revelation of hiddenness, the revelation of the hiddenness of hiddenness, so that we can behold that there's the possibility of something more that really exists. Afreilichen Purim.